Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we discuss Patrick Cantlay's win at the Memorial and all the storylines surrounding the U.S. Women's Open.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have one if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers. Today I'm joined by Sam Wyman, Keeley Levins. Guys, this is a really jam-packed weekend, obviously. Let's start with the Memorial, but obviously we're going to get to the U.S. Women's Open. We have Chris Powers, our man on the ground, was there in Charleston. He will be calling in to give us a wrap-up, talk about Jungyoon Lee Six's win there. But first, let's talk about the Memorial. Patrick Cantlay, incredible story, obviously. A guy who was a can't-miss prospect, then had a serious back injury, barely played for a few years, and now he's rallied to up to number 8 in the world ranking with this win. Sam, you know, what jumped out at you most about Cantlay coming through at the Memorial? Biggest win of his career so far.
Biggest win of his career. Let's not forget also that for a brief period at the Masters, he was a guy that made a run and looked like he had a chance to make his biggest win. A green jacket.
More than brief. I mean, that was a good chunk of the day. Yeah.
So, an amazing storyline. I feel like this storyline of Jack Nicklaus imparting some level of wisdom on player. Why are you rolling your eyes?
Because
that was not supposed to be for public consumption.
Was it? Oh.
Yeah. Imparting wisdom on a guy and that being a difference maker. It was a story, remember, with Rory a few times where, Jack teaching Rory about Augusta National. Here it was Jack telling Patrick Cantlay that he's got a nut, needs to figure out those last 30 minutes of a golf tournament. And in this case, it proved to be, exactly what he needed, because that was when he was at his most impressive. So Cantlay, unbelievable talent. Obviously, like a lot of people talk about kind of his demeanor and how he's a really serious guy. And I don't know how much of that is a reflection of what he's been through in his life, which is pretty significant. But I seem to recall that he was a pretty serious guy before that as well, when he was first coming out on tour. So, he's got all the makings of a star, with the possible exception that he's just not that overtly engaging, or he doesn't have like a huge personality, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I rolled my eyes because I thought you were going to give all the credit to Jack there.
I know 85% of the credit goes to Jack.
Only 85%.
Okay, that's fair. Right. Yeah, that lines up.
No, I'm glad you mentioned his demeanor, because even in his post-round press conference, he was obviously upbeat and very excited, but he even said that arriving to the course or at some point that morning, someone saw a look on his face and said, "It can't be that bad, can it?" And he said, "I was actually in a great mood." So like he just has this
his
natural face is kind of this scowl, and you're right, he's not going to be this gregarious guy, or outwardly at least. I'm not, of course he seems like a nice guy. He's 27 years old, by the way. Seems like it's weird. It seems like he's been around for a long time, but it also seems like he hasn't been around for a long time, because his PGA Tour career, where he's been a full-time player, this is really only, I think, his third season of that.
Yeah. He's when you're talking about his personality and like how kind of quiet he is, in a way, I think it made him more interesting this weekend in particular. If it's any gauge of like how many people on the periphery of golf that like text you during tournaments, like I had a lot of people texting me like, who is this guy? Mm. Like, he's so mysterious. Like, what's his deal? And I was just texting everyone a link to Mike Stachura's piece on him, which if you haven't read it, listeners, you should. But no, I was definitely really happy to see him win. And like he said, it has just felt like it's a matter of time for so long. Even this season alone has been incredible, and just seeing him at the Masters, he looked so ready to like break through and win again.
Well, it's crazy because not only did he have the serious back injury, the stress fracture that really looked like it might almost end his career, he had this tragedy in 2016 with his best friend from college and caddy. He saw him killed in a hit and run accident right in front of him. So, I mean, to just overcome something that horrific is wild. And again, we're talking about a guy who, by the time he was a sophomore at UCLA, he had already been the world number one amateur 54 weeks in a row, which is a record, until actually John Rahm ended up beating it by 1 week a couple years later. But still, basically, a record setting performance as an amateur, which also included shooting a 60 in a PGA Tour event at the Travelers Championship in 2011 when he was, I think, 19 years old. He shot a 60 on PGA Tour. So just, you know, an amazing talent. So it I guess in a way, Sam, obviously it's not a surprise.
No, you know what I was going to say about his demeanor, one of the things that brings me back to saying that, you know, it sort of precedes everything that he sort of endured as a professional was Golf Digest. We did an instruction feature on him and with an accompanying video. And I seem to recall our instruction editor saying, you know, really nice kid, amazing talent. It was really difficult to get him to talk about his swing and himself because he just doesn't have that personality. And that was, again, when he was this, you know, up-and-coming amateur. And so that was kind of part of the package with him. And again, I certainly don't mean to make light of what he went through, because that's horrific, and you can understand where a guy might just never recover from it, as, you know, as a golfer at least. So to come back from that, but it is part of his storyline. And you're right, you know, if you had asked us in 2011, 2012, who were some guys who were going to make a run at being number one golfer in the world, you would say, oh, Patrick Cantlay is a can't-miss prospect.
Yep, exactly. Even at that time, ahead of Jordan Spieth or Justin Thomas, these other guys who obviously have kind of passed him. But now, you know, Cantlay still has plenty of time to correct that. And you mentioned the run at the Masters. He actually ended up finishing tied for ninth because he fell back after he took the lead. But then he finished T3 at Bethpage Black, the PGA Championship. So he's trending in the right direction, obviously, at the major championships as well. And I know in our ranking, I think I had him 13th before last week. I'm going to have to slide him up into the top 10, obviously. His odds have also changed a lot. He was 30-1, which is kind of, you know, a sneaky, not even a middle-of-the-pack guy, above middle pack. Now he's up to, I think, 16-1. Mm-hmm. So he's almost in that top tier of favorites heading into Pebble Beach, and it kind of makes sense. Of course, we do have to mention he's not the quickest player. That's kind of the one drawback, and when people watch him, they do get frustrated. He takes a long time to pull the trigger on the club. So that might be one thing that it'd be nice to see him improve. I don't care about the demeanor or anything else. He kind of has that Brooks Koepka vibe, like, I'm just serious. I'm not going to let my emotions show either way. And you know, that's a route that some guys go. But he could pick up the pace when he's playing. However, he always holds a soft spot in my heart because I won a bet on him at the Shriners. All these guys who I liked, you know, I won bets on him. And that was a legit bet. I was in Las Vegas. I placed $20 on him to win, and he won. That was his first win. So,
who's on the other side of that equation? Guy who, like, you resent because they cost you money.
Well, Bubba Watson cost me my Louis Oosthuizen bet at the Masters.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a guy that you bet on.
I bet on and they never come through. Right. That's a good question. Oh, Mark Leishman.
Right.
And he's a great guy, but I always bet on Mark Leishman. He just seems like he's great value. He's always like 40-50-1. He's had a couple close calls at majors. And now that I've been on the Mark Leishman train, he fizzles out. So that's a good one.
Mark Leishman. Sounds like it's more your fault than Mark's fault, though.
It probably is. What did you think about Tiger Woods' performance? Obviously, he got off to an okay start and kind of, you know, languished in the middle there, and then had that brilliant Sunday, although it does seem like he never quite finishes off these great rounds when, you know, he's 7-under through 12 holes and he ends up only shooting 67. But overall, obviously, some improvements, especially from what we saw at Bethpage.
For sure. And if you go by his comments and even his demeanor in some of his post-round remarks, I think it's exactly what he was looking for, which suggests that, you know, Tiger in an event before the U.S. Open is not necessarily looking to win the Memorial. It's, you know, certainly something he wants to win, but he's more focused on his preparation and where he needs to be and get his game in preparation for the U.S. Open, which is not dissimilar from what he was doing prior to the Masters, which was, you know, he didn't really contend at all prior to his win at Augusta, but he was fairly encouraged by what he saw in his swing, and he talks about this kind of one breakthrough in his swing that he made prior to the final round, and which yielded huge results, and he felt like he was hitting the ball really well. He talked a lot about how he really wants to get the ball up in the air in preparation for Pebble Beach because he needs to sort of land it on these kind of, I guess, these small landing areas there, and that was kind of a big part of it. So it does feel like, giving him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, he is preparing differently than just trying to contend and win a tournament. He's mm-hmm. trying to get certain shots, you know, in his mind and certain feels, to use his word, squared away. And based on that, definitely feel like a huge step in the right direction. Definitely a reason to think that he can contend at Pebble Beach, although obviously a much different type of golf course than Mirfield Village. So, you know, I'm bullish.
No, I think it was really good to see. And I think it also just kind of helps me, at least, just kind of forget about Bethpage and just kind of chalk it up to like, okay, that was too quick of a turnaround. Like, the amount of energy that was expended at the Masters was enormous for him. And I think it was just kind of like the schedule kind of getting him a bit, and then seeing him just kind of very comfortable and like so much more in control. I feel really good about Pebble.
He did look really comfortable. In fact, on Sunday yesterday, I don't know what it was, he looked so good. And I said that and my wife just laughed. I was like, doesn't he look good? I mean, he did. I mean, the whole out, I mean, he just, I don't even like the mock, but on him, it looked effortless.
Sounds like he needed a moment.
Yeah, he really did look good. No, the thing that I was most worried about, and have been worried the most about this whole year, is the number of missed putts. And I'm not talking about like tap-ins, but, you know, these kind of 4 to 8 footers. I think at Bethpage in the first or second round, there was one day where he was 0-for-5 from that range. At Memorial, it seemed like he made every one of them just about. I know he missed a short birdie on the back nine on Sunday, but I just thought he putted a lot better and didn't, you know, throw away one or two shots around, which I think we've seen him done. What's crazy, though, when you mentioned coming to the Masters, it's not like he had won his previous event or even come close. This T9 is his second best stroke play performance of the year. Obviously, at the match play, he was, T5 because he was in the quarterfinals. But what's crazy to me, it makes the Masters win even more amazing. Even this one, he never seriously contended. Mm-hmm. And so there hasn't been one other tournament this year where he seriously contended, and yet he won the Masters. It's just,
well, again, it goes back
crazy
to that idea that he's sort of playing a different game than everyone else. He's, you know, he's looking at these, you know, these 4 events a year. Obviously, one he didn't prepare sufficiently for when he paid the price for it. But if you look at how he played this week and how it factors into his preparation for Pebble Beach, it just shows that that's kind of where his focus is.
And it makes total sense. I mean, the state that his body must be in right now, I think that you have to just kind of hone in on just the 4. I think anything more would be too much if he's out there trying to win every single event. Like, as much as I know Alex would like to see that, but
like to see a little effort from. But no, it was a good effort. It was a good effort.
One other thing about that, just real quick, is what will be interesting to see is do things change once the major season passes? Which is to say, does he suddenly become like, you know, the FedEx Cup? Each event on its own is worth a ton. So does he start? Mm-hmm. Does he start looking at regular tour events with a little bit more as self-contained tournaments that he needs to win?
Right.
And he was so good at the end of last season too.
Right. Well, anyway, speaking of Tiger, someone who he's been linked to in the past was probably the biggest news story of the week. That's Hank Haney, his former swing coach. They worked together from 2004 to 2010. They won 6 majors together. Hank obviously said some controversial things about women's golf, about Koreans in women's golf when he was asked about the U.S. Open, some disparaging remarks. Tiger, he's been suspended from his radio show. We don't know for how long. Tiger Woods was asked about it, and he said he deserved it. And you can't say stuff like that, and he deserved it. That was basically Tiger's stance, and everybody kind of said, wow, good for Tiger for sticking up, although Tiger probably had some other motivations as well with the way he and Hank left it and with the book and everything else.
For sure.
But anyway, Sam, let's go back to Haney's comments. You know, obviously this created this kind of firestorm on Wednesday on his show on PGA Tour Radio.
Let me give you my...
And first, we do need to say that he has been a longtime contributor
to Golf Digest,
editor to Golf Digest. So, you know, that we know that. We have to acknowledge that up front.
And I'll get to why what he said was stupid in a moment, because I agree it was stupid. But partially in his defense, or part of an explanation, is Hank Haney has a radio show that's on, how often was it on?
I think it's on Monday through Friday.
Monday through Friday. How many hours a day?
2 hours.
Okay, 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday.
I'm just guessing here, but I think that's right.
Okay, so, let's just say he's, 10 hours of space to fill, and it's live, okay?
Yes.
We record this podcast once a week.
Yes.
We jam-pack the week's events into 30 minutes or so. We have Brittany who's sitting there. Mm-hmm. If one of you said something stupid, Brittany presses pause and says, hey, you know, that was worded incorrectly or something like that. You should rethink about that. So he's got 10 hours of live radio to fill, at which point you are at some point grasping for content and ideas. He said something stupid. He didn't think it through. And in that moment, I think he was trying to make a bad joke that just backfired. And he is paying the price for it. Now, why was it a bad joke? Why did it backfire? It backfired because two things. One is he sort of lumped all Koreans together as if they're all indistinguishable from one another, right, which is a stereotype that I think Asians face, you know, sometimes in this country or rail against for rightful reasons as well. And then he also basically diminished the entire LPGA tour, saying, well, the LPGA tour is just a bunch of Koreans who are, again, indistinguishable from one another, and so I don't really care. He professed no knowledge of where the tournament was being played, who the best players are in the game.
Couldn't name six players.
All those things, and he gave a pithy response about how someone named Lee is going to probably win, and it's probably going to be a Korean. So all dumb things to say. I'm not going to hog the spotlight here, because Keely, I know you want to talk about it too, but you know, it was brought to his attention what he said was stupid. He tried to kind of say something, kind of a half-hearted apology on the air. And then later, after it was sort of brought to his attention that what he said was really poorly worded and was deemed offensive to a lot of people, he did issue an apology. My feeling is if he stuck to that apology and stopped there, he pays a price for it, but it's a price that has you know, it ends at some point, and Hank Haney gets back to being who he is, which is one of the personalities in the game. And he kind of has this moment where he says, "Yeah, I made a mistake. I shouldn't have said that." And he moves on, but he's kind of doubled down since then. And that's where I feel like it's hard to feel sympathetic toward him anymore.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that we can all appreciate that, you know, people make mistakes. We are all humans. And the way that you're able to forgive someone for making a mistake is if the apology feels real and genuine, and there's like a obvious knowledge that a mistake occurred. And just some of the tweets that came out after the win just made it feel like there was not as much of an understanding of what happened, that, you know, he gave off not an apology by the end of it. And that was, you know, that's just really hard for a lot of people to try and think through logically, because it's really too bad. The LPGA Tour is in an extremely healthy place. There are many South Korean players who are very good. There are many Americans who are very good. There are many Europeans who are very good. So it was... so many people have put so much effort into getting the LPGA Tour to the really impressive level that it's at right now. It was just really hard for everyone to hear someone try and diminish that.
No, what I was going to say is 100%. And, you know, one of the challenges that the LPGA Tour faces is that they have this talent pool of players who are exceptional and have all of them have disparate personalities and disparate journeys to getting to the point where they are. The problem is that because with some there is a language barrier, people don't know those stories as well as they know other players. We started the show by talking about Patrick Cantlay and doesn't emote as much and doesn't really present as much of himself as other players do, and how that can sort of be a drawback. Well, now factor in someone who doesn't, or some players who don't even speak the language. And so that's a challenge that they face. The problem is that, people then are so quick to dismiss those players because they refuse to see that they actually have unique stories, unique personalities, just because they can't get past the language barrier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the by far the craziest thing to me is, like Sam said, once all this controversy happened and it was then kept alive with his apology, which wasn't a great apology, and then it was kept alive even more by Tiger running him over. Then Sunday night, he just starts tweeting again. And not once, not twice, but three, four, five times. He ended up deleting one of the tweets, but he then tries to congratulate the winner, who did happen to be a Lee in her last name, Jung Yoon Lee 6, actually. and he spelled her name wrong twice. Yeah. It took him 3 tweets to even spell the name right. So, you know, I just don't get why someone who's already under intense scrutiny for controversial comments would
for this specific thing
wouldn't be more careful. Yeah. And you know, it's just sad because I'll be the first to admit, I mean, we could talk about the LPGA more. We could pump it up more. We're in position to do that. We should do it more, and I should do it more. But I also don't have nearly the reach of a Hank Haney, and I'm not going to disparage the women's game and just toss it off like it doesn't matter at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a difference between that. You know, he should at least – I know his platform is PGA Tour Radio. I know he, you know, is more into the PGA Tour side of things and the men's game. But you can't have that platform and be so disparaging of such a big portion of the game. It's just mm-hmm. not a good look for everyone involved. You need to – even if he doesn't know – can't name 6 players, he shouldn't say that, and he definitely shouldn't say it the way he did in comments that can be, you know, interpreted as being racist and sexist and all that. So just a really bad week by Hank Haney. We'll have to see what happens with him going forward. But just disappointing comments, I think we agree all around. That being said, we do want to talk about the women's game. We want to talk about the U.S. Women's Open, and we want to talk about Jungyoon Lee 6, who ended up being 6 under and winning her first LPGA title, as well as obviously her first major at the Country Club of Charleston. And we had a guy there, Chris Powers, was our man on the ground there. We want to bring him in to ask him all about what was going on down in Charleston.
Before we go on, let me talk for a second about Golf Digest Schools. Golf Digest Schools is our new cutting-edge video instruction platform offering more than 250 classes on every part of the game and featuring the leading teachers in golf, from Butch Harmon to David Ledbetter to Michael Breed. Unlike the quick tips you can find across the internet, these are full game improvement programs meant to be followed step by step as if you were working with a pro. It's like Masterclass meets Netflix, but even better because there's the added promise of feedback. To sign up for Golf Digest Schools, go to golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS to get 30% off an annual subscription. Again, golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS.
All right, Chris, thanks for hopping on here. Obviously, big week down in Charleston. Let's start with Jungyoon Lee 6, who finished 6 under. Incredibly, get her first win. What, you know, what were your impressions of her game? Obviously, she's a very talented young player that we should be all aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought she was incredible yesterday. To be honest with you, she wasn't really on the. Obviously, she's on the top of the leaderboard, but on Saturday, I was really kind of focused on Lexi. You know, with her in contention, only mm-hmm. one back, and then this. Lee 6, I guess we're calling her.
We could just call her 6 because that's what she goes by, right? She marks her balls
yes.
with 6. And she
her got, Instagram yeah, handle is 6.
6.
Yeah.
So 6. Yeah. Let's just call her 6.
Yeah, 6. By the way, I can't believe all you Friday Night Lights TV show fanboys and fangirls didn't make the Jason Street connection.
Yes.
That's what Tim Riggins used to call 6. Jason Street. 6.
Oh my gosh, you're That's so right. Wow, oh I really miss Tim Riggins right now.
We really blew that meme. That you could still do it.
Yeah, you still have time.
Yeah. It's not too late, obviously.
Maybe I'll rip it from you while we're talking.
Just.
Yeah, no, she 6. Was. she was incredible yesterday. We were talking about it yesterday. She had a machine like round and mm-hmm. Obviously a couple slip ups late, but. All day, she played the best round of the day. I mean, those last 5 groups, the best score besides her was Lexi at 73, I think. The other 9 players in those last 5 groups played combined 30 over, and
that's
you know, she shot she shot 1 under, and that's why she won, obviously. And
wow.
she won by a shot, and she played that 11th hole. She made birdie. She hit one of the most ridiculous shots, probably that she'll ever hit off the. Shoulder on the reverse for Dan Green that funneled it back toward the hole, and then she made the putt, and then she, you know, she was nails those last on that back 9 and just missed a short putt on 16 and 18, and mm-hmm. if not for those two, I mean, she would have won in a runaway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, she was about, what, 2 feet away from disaster on 11. Instead, it ended up being
a
brilliant shot.
Yeah,
I don't know if that was where she meant to aim it or not, but it ended up being obviously an incredible shot and really kind of jump-started that back nine. You know, we were just talking about the Hank Haney comments, and I know, you know, you were down there, obviously, the day that it kind of broke, and you asked some players about it. What was, you know, kind of the overall reaction from the players to Haney's comments? And I wonder, was there any reaction from Six after her win? Did anybody ask her about it or anything like
that?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I would say the overall reaction was pretty muted, which, you know, was a little disappointing. You would expect them to kind of all, like, rally together, I guess, and, you know, defend their tour, but I guess no one really wanted to, you know, make a headline or anything like that. I asked Ken, and I made the mistake of kind of asking them Wednesday morning, like, you know, an hour or so after it happened, so none of them had really
heard about it.
What happened? Daniel Kang literally was like staring at me like I, you know, like I was a clown.
Clown question, bro.
And then I was like trying to explain what Haney said. I was like, oh, people were saying it was race. She was like, oh, I don't know. And then I got Georgia Hall, and she kind of daggered him. She had no idea who Hank Haney was. So I was like, oh, geez, I'm getting
nothing.
Wait,
that's actually such a good response.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And then somebody asked Paula Creamer after her second round, and she was like, no, I'm not gonna touch it. I brought it up to Brooke Henderson, and she was like, no, I'm gonna pass.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone did bring it up in the press conference last night, and, you know, it was tough through the translator, but even through the translator, she kind of just, you know, glossed over it, didn't really have a response at all. And I don't think she really knew who Hank Haney was either.
There's a certain kind of like strength in not responding too. It's just like, you know what, we're not even gonna give this that weight by responding to it at all. I kind of respect that.
It seemed like the biggest response was from Michelle Wee, who wasn't in the field.
She wasn't there.
Christina
Kim too. Yeah, but if you were there, you're kind of focused on the tournament. It makes sense.
You
especially
have other places
on
to put your energy.
Yeah. Right, especially on Wednesday right after it happened. Well, you know, you mentioned Lexi Thompson, and obviously she ends up tied for second, which, you know, looks like a great result, but she really had a good chance here, right, Chris? I mean, obviously it seemed like the putter, not surprisingly, is the part of the game that held her back.
It's amazing because she obviously went to that claw grip that her brother.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, her brother told her on like Tuesday to go to it. That's a bit of a strange move, I think. You know.
Wow. Like, I trust my brother, but I don't think I would.
Yeah. She said that he's been kind of trying to get her to do it for a long time, and for some reason, this was the week she decided to do it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, she ranks 115th in putting throughout the season, and she ended up 41st in putting for the week, so she actually had a decent week putting for her.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot imagine if she could putt. I mean, she might win these tournaments by like 10 shots. It's insane. She hits every green. She hits it 50 yards past everyone. She hits 3-wood on some of these holes past, you know, the people she's playing with. And she just, I mean, she would she is dominating. She has 10 wins. She's 24 years old, and I can't imagine how many wins she would have if she could, you know, hole some of these putts.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, I was just telling Keeley before, we were talking about how on that par five, I think it was the ninth hole, she ended up making birdie, but she came up short. But Lexi Thompson hit an iron from 260.
Yeah. Unreal.
She came up just a little short, but it was just incredible. Like, I was like, what is going on here? I mean, so she, she's a bomber.
It was like, she was just off the front of the green.
Just off
the
front.
She used the putter on her.
She could have gotten a bigger bounce and it would have been on the green. Speaking of bounces and everything else, the course, the Country Club of Charleston was getting rave reviews by the architecture club on Twitter, and they're a tough crowd. So what, you know, on TV, obviously it looked cool. Of course, the reverse Redan 11th hole, the par three, got most of the attention all week. But what else jumped out to you, Chris? As and we'll refer to you as Junior architecture guru from here on forward if you give a good answer.
Rainer Jr.
Rainer, yeah.
No, I'll say the hype was absolutely real. The place is incredible. You know, it's so like the routing, you know, they love that word.
Routing. Ooh, routing. Good job.
it's incredible. You can see every hole on the course in an hour or so. You know, you go to these courses, we've been going to Bethpage, Shinnecock, Oakmont. I went to Oakmont a few years ago as a fan, my last tournament as a fan, RIP, my fan career. Layouts are like, if you want to see some of these holes, it's like a mile walk, 2 mile, it takes up the whole day. This place was like, all the tee boxes are right next to the greens. Some of them are connected. You can get to any hole on the course in a couple minutes. You can see them all. And then, the actual course itself, obviously the 11th hole was, lit.
Yeah, it was lit. It was lit.
If you will. And then
we will.
16, looking from the fairway that, I don't know what the word is, the template word is for it or whatever, but that was an incredible hole. All those holes on the back nine, 10, I'm not sure if 10, got enough love on the broadcast, but it's out on the water there. It's like tucked away in the corner. It was a really, really sick course and obviously baked out and firm and fast. And I think it was perfect for the ladies, perfect for the way they play. And, they should absolutely go back. Obviously they had the women's amateur there. Right. Now US Open. I think they should totally go back. It was a sick place. Great course, great week, and six under one. It was still a tough layout for them.
Right. Speaking of the course and everything, I know there was a little bit of a scare. What was that, Friday night with the lightning that went viral? That was wild. Where were you when that happened? And
we were in the media center, obviously, because it sounded like it was pouring, but it really didn't rain that hard. It was like a light rain, and then all the volunteers were also in the media center. And it literally sounded like the media center got hit. That is how crazy the whole ground shook. I swear to God, people went to the ground and inside the media center. Like
I hate that. Oh my God,
it was insane. Like a bomb went off.
I would have freaked out.
It's happening. Like our life's ending right now.
Oh my goodness.
That kind of whole feeling.
Wow. That's wild.
It was crazy.
And they got rid of that tree right away. You had some good video.
Right away.
Were you there? Were you there like all night? I mean, what was going on there? Did you sleep there?
It
was pitch black.
Are you still there?
Yeah. Are you really home?
Yeah. We were there pretty late. I guess that was Friday night because of the rain delay. And then was that the night that no, that was Thursday night. Never mind. So no, it was just a late night because of the rain delay and all that. But when I left, they were chopping away, and apparently it was like I heard this on the broadcast. I think it was like a big dramatic deal with the membership because they planted that tree after the hurricane a bunch of years ago. It was the first tree, and they had to get an arborist to come okay that they could chop it down. It was like typical like country club problems to have
arborist. Yeah, that's serious.
but the
stuff.
Tree is completely gone. It's they gave it the axe.
J. Marie Green was kind of the breakout star other than six during the week. And, you know, obviously I know of J. Marie Green. She's around. She's very active on social media. She's kind of, she's kind of out there. She's, one of the better American players. I was so stunned, though, by her career track record. No previous top fives in any event ever. I know, and she's had, a handful of top tens. I know she played pretty well at the ANA T12 there. But What was it this week that kind of, got her going? I mean, obviously she had the lead going into the back nine at a major championship, kind of out of nowhere.
She was talking about feeling really calm, I guess, Saturday night, and her brother is on the bag with her, and I think that helped her out a lot. And she did play well at the Anna Inspiration, I think tied for 12th. She's played pretty well in the last few majors, and she was talking about that too. I had to look it up. I wanted to make sure she wasn't lying. She has played well in the last few majors. I think the Women's British Open, she played well. This year's Anna Inspiration, and then another one last year, maybe the Evian.
Yep.
So she was kind of trending in this. I don't know about the winning, you know, she was going to win out of nowhere, but she her game is obviously trending in the right direction. I have to be honest, I'd never heard of her before this week, but wow. You know, she's a young American. Okay. You'd think more people would know about her, but yeah, obviously we do now, and I think she's a pretty good player. I think she'll be around for a long time now.
$1 million was the winner's take for the first time at the U.S. Women's Open. Pretty hefty stuff there. And obviously Six gets to take that home. I know she had some funny responses on what she planned to do with the money.
Yeah, she said through a translator, obviously, again, that the first thing she said, she was going to buy ramen with it.
That seemed like the last. Isn't ramen, what's it called? It's an inferior product, meaning like when you get rich, you buy less of it. That's what we learned in econ. That's like, I mean, I love ramen personally.
I know. But obviously, it's like a big trendy food now. And you know,
yeah, that's true.
I'm sure in New York City, they're charging you like $50 for it.
Yeah, it's yeah. delicious. Places.
I went to Momofuku, actually. Oh, yeah? Not like the one of the ones. There's a few of them, right?
Yeah.
But it was still like, for lunch, it was like $18 for a bowl of ramen, which seems yeah, yeah. a lot because it's so 18 good. Cents if you buy it at Costco.
The mushrooms, and then like yeah. you get like the soy egg in there.
So maybe she's talking about some high-end ramen.
Yeah, maybe she's yeah. just crushing ramen yeah. like three meals a day. But I think the money means a lot more to her than just ramen. And she said she didn't say shoes too.
Shoes, okay. There you go.
You can spend some money there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've
yeah.
heard.
But you know, you can see it. When she was asked on Fox about winning, she obviously started crying, and her translator started crying too. I think it means a lot more than that. Obviously, if you've read her story, her father was paralyzed when she was 4 years old, and it made her amateur career really tough because the hotels they were traveling to, the ones that could accommodate her dad in a wheelchair were more expensive. So I think this money means a lot more to her than she let on about the ramen and shoes comment. And she said she plays golf to support her family. So I think the $1 million really is going to have a crazy effect on her life.
Yeah. You could see the emotion and I mean, how much, which I love when anyone shows that much
right.
emotion, but that was really cool. Keely, what do you know about, Six previously before this week, obviously. I mean, she's young, she's only 23, but this was kind of expected. I mean, big things have been expected of her.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you talk about the win as a breakout, which it is, you know, it's her first win, but I mean, her consistency this year and before this year, even like she has won before, on the Korean LPGA tour. And I think that that's like kind of undervalued in the way that like we talk about these like young new Korean players coming out on the LPGA, and it's just like, oh my gosh, they came out of nowhere, like what is happening? And if you go back far enough, you're like, oh no, like the KLPGA is severely competitive.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, winning on the KLPGA is like really difficult to do. And if you come out like with multiple wins from that, you're not a scared little rookie
right.
on the LPGA. You are a trained professional
right.
and you're ready to win. And I think this is really only the beginning for her.
And just so people who don't know, there were six Jungyoon Lees on the Korean LPGA.
Oh, yeah, that's where the number comes
right.
from.
And
yeah.
so they actually numbered them 1 through 6, and because she was the youngest one, she was assigned 6.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually loves it, and she prefers to go, what we talked about, she has her handle and everything else.
And
so
you could see her ball, like they zoomed in
yeah,
on it a couple times.
Yeah, you could
times.
See the big six.
It's
but
marked.
What happens when if they're more get added to the tour? I hope she doesn't have to get bumped around. She's going to keep 6.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Okay.
She has to keep 6.
And
going back to what Keely was just saying about the Korean, she was saying last night how she's won 7 times on the Korean LPGA tour.
Yeah.
Right.
And she was saying how she's full time LPGA and she doesn't want to ever go back to KL because of how like competitive they are. It sounds like it's pretty cutthroat.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
and so the same like Sung Hyun Park, like
right.
when she came out and won
yes.
the Women's Open when it was in Bedminster, and it was another kind of like surprise moment, and she I think is either 9 or 10 wins on the KLPGA. Right. Like, it's really intense.
Yeah, it's like Hideki Matsuyama on the Japan Tour. I mean, he has probably 10 wins in the Japan Tour before he came up, before he started, you know, winning PGA Tour events. So it's definitely, yeah, it's nothing to, you know, scoff at. We're always so PGA Tour and LPGA Tour centric, but you know, there are other tours, and they're creating these great players. Obviously, you know, even Brooks Koepka, we saw, kind of honed his skills over in Europe.
Absolutely.
So, well, anyway, Junyoung Lee 6, great week. Chris Powers 3, we call him CP3 because he three putts a lot. He had a great week as well down there in Charleston. Chris, before I let you go, I mean, I know we're both devastated about Jeopardy James going down.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
Just one of the all-time daggers.
I read it this morning at like 5 a.m. before I got on my flight. And then, I mean, as if I wasn't, you know, sad and depressed enough about being up that early.
Yeah.
I read this news. I get this news laid on top of me. You know, all I'm looking forward to on a Monday is 7 o'clock Jeopardy.
Agree.
This guy is on a tear. I mean, and the freaking internet has to ruin everything.
Classic.
Everything.
Classic.
Yeah.
I thought, I like, because I read it like right when I woke up, I like check my phone, which is very unhealthy, but it's like the first thing I do. And I read that, and then like I went through my whole morning routine, and I got to the office, and I was like, wait, is that real? Is that over?
It makes me, I have like a pit in my stomach.
It's like a nightmare. Yeah.
I don't even want to, I mean, how are you supposed to watch tonight?
It's going to be really tough to watch.
You can't watch it.
And now I heard apparently I haven't looked, but now he's not going to break either of Jennings' records.
No,
right?
No, he needed one more average win for him would have pushed him over Jennings' record. So he didn't even get to Jennings' money record. Again, it would have been in, you know, about 40% of the games, which would have been incredible. But yeah, he's not even going to come away with either record. It just doesn't seem right, almost. When I first heard about it, I was hoping A, it was some kind of gag, but then, you know, it's not April Fool's. Then B, that maybe this was, you know, they taped these episodes months down the road, that maybe it at least was, you know, 20 shows away or something. Now, I mean, like you said, Chris, I mean, you know, I'm DVRing this every night. I'm looking forward to watching it. If I don't watch it in real time, I watch it like, you know, an hour later or something.
Right.
You know, got to put the baby down. You know, I got to watch, got to let her watch Sesame Street. But then I watched Jeopardy, and it's so entertaining, this guy. And I remember watching when Ken Jennings did it, and it was incredible. And it was crushing when he lost too. But this is more sudden and more stunning, especially with apparently the way it happens with such a low total. Although he did have a genius strategy to try to,
That's crazy.
Yeah, he tried. He made sure he beat the third place guy from snaking out a win, but unfortunately the leader got it right. Anyway, we'll have to watch it later. But I knew you'd be upset also.
Very upset.
All right. Anyway, Chris, good job. Thanks for calling in, and we will see you tomorrow, man. Later.
Okay. Later.
Bye.
All right. Thanks to Chris Powers for joining us. Although he doesn't really have a busy day, the guy took an early flight back. He's just kind of lounging.
He's probably
around
on the golf course,
Exactly. He's probably playing golf.
That's exactly where he is. You know it.
Yeah. Anyway, want to wrap up with some awards here. Let's start with the best one-day story. That goes to Bud Cauley, who was in serious contention at the Memorial, not through two rounds, but through three rounds. So it really was kind of a two-day story, if I'm being honest here. Maybe a three-day story. Bud Cauley, incredibly, talk about comebacks. A year ago, after missing the cut at the Memorial, got into a serious car accident with numerous people involved. He suffered the worst injuries. A friend of his went through a windshield. Nobody died, miraculously, but Bud Cauley, punctured lung, broken leg, 6 broken ribs, concussion. Not only is he back on the PGA Tour, he's contending an event. So, you know, even though he didn't have the greatest weekend, he still finished T9. Pretty impressive, Sam.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine the obviously physical trauma someone goes through, but then the emotional trauma of a car accident like that. So to get your way back and then to actually contend in the same setting.
Mm-hmm. Like, you'd think you might not even want to go back to that area.
I wouldn't want to go back there. Right. I wouldn't want to deal. It brings back so many bad memories. Right. And to do that, I mean, I don't know enough about what his psyche is, but on some level you wonder if that sort of helps exercise the sort of the demons
closure.
Of that.
Closure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So good on him, though. That's fantastic.
It was, and it felt so overwhelming to have both he and Cantley, who had gone through so much. I mean, two very young guys, like Bud's 29, Cantley's 27,
both under 30,
who have been through this, like, extreme traumas. It was very powerful to watch them both play so well.
And like you said, Sam, I mean, it's tough to ever know how you're going to overcome this. And I'm not saying this is what is totally thrown off Bill Haas's career, but he was in an accident where his friend, a guy who he was staying with, died. Mm-hmm. He had no serious injuries. And he's really struggling to even just stay on the tour these days. He had to use his top 50 exemption this year, career money leader. So, yeah, you just never know what that's going to do to you.
Yeah, I mean, you always hear these stories about how guys have so many things to deal with, off the golf course that can be distractions for them. And it's just so obviously, this is an obvious statement, but it's so out of my realm of possibility of playing, competitive PGA Tour golf to begin with. Imagine now playing when you have both physical injuries, physical ailments, and then also sort of emotional weight on some level that you're dealing with. So again, really, it's impressive when a guy kind of overcomes that, and it's completely understandable when it's one of the reasons why a guy is struggling.
And I think it's like a golf specific thing too. Like, I'm sure it's really hard to play any professional sport if you've been through a great trauma, but there's something so specific about golf, with like how much time you spend alone with your thoughts while you're competing. It's not like you're running a 100 meter dash or something. Like, you're out there and you've got to deal with yourself for like 5-6 hours. And I think that it's almost like more impressive that you're able to play golf of all things after going through something like that.
Yep. Impressive performance by Colley for sure. This week, pros are just like us. Got to single out Matt Kuchar here for really, really just clawing, grubbing, going after he wanted a ruling in his favor that just was not going to happen. And it just reminded, if we were playing.
I would challenge that just like that. It's like, in no scenario would you plead over and over with someone. Because
you wouldn't plead over and over. But if we were playing and you were in a pitch mark in the fairway, of course I would just say, just move it. I don't care.
Of course, that's my point, though. Yeah. But you always feel bad, when you have those moments like, hey, I'm going to move it off this this sewer grate here.
Right.
Or, I'm going to move it out of that. And 99.9% of the time, it's like, don't worry about it, no problem. Right. But imagine if someone said, actually, I'm not cool with that.
Right.
You're like, well, what about this? It's my pitch mark.
But this wasn't a sewer grate.
Yeah. No, I know.
My point is that brutal.
Like, a lot of these rules disputes that we have talked about this year and last year are these gray area moments where it's unclear whether someone – what the ruling is. Well, now you have a rules official standing over you and saying, no, you're wrong. This is not an opportunity where you can get relief.
It looked bad when he called for the second.
The second one, that's what killed it.
When it was clearly, even Jack Nicklaus, who was in the booth the entire week, by the way.
I know.
Unreal.
He was even like, I've never seen.
And then he went on to make par. I mean, it wasn't like that big of a
deal. Yeah, it wasn't even that. But that's what I'm saying. That's why in this case he was like us, because he should be above this. Tiger found himself in a divot one day, just hit a great shot. Like, these guys are good. They can handle this sort of thing. It wasn't that big of a deal. So, anyway, just another weird scenario for Kuchar, who's obviously not had the best. Well, he's had a great year.
He's had a fantastic year.
But in another way, he hasn't had a great
year.
PR
year.
Yeah. So the beat went on with that. Our stat of the week is, this is crazy to me, the Mizuno Open on the Japan Tour. It was played at Royal Golf Club in Ibaraki. I don't know how to pronounce that. 8,016 yards, the layup. 8,016 yards. It had a par 5, 705 yards.
Was it at elevation? Did we determine if it was?
I think it was at a little elevation, but still. No, it's still. Yeah, but you don't, that's crazy.
It's not like it was on Everest. Like, it's still.
Right, but like an 8, I'm not, I mean, it's, no, it, no, it's
we're
crazy.
Getting,
on
we're getting close to that number. Yes. We're getting close to that number, but to see it actually.
Well, what was the international one? It was so many years ago.
But I was going to say, when they went back to the BMW at Cherry Hills, might have been a 7,800 or something.
Right. And that's a mile high.
That's a mile high.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, just crazy. The yardages these guys.
I don't get good feelings.
And I'm not going to name the course by name, but the course I played over the weekend, public course, even though it's been the rainiest spring in history, they're still watering the fairways and the tee boxes. There's standing water. And I'm hitting balls, literally getting no roll, just sticking. I mean, I'm like Kuchar landing in pitch marks out there.
Mm-hmm. Calling over.
And so I'm
officials.
Playing 6,000 yards, and it feels like 9,000 yards. That's I just brutal. Want I want to get some roll. I want to, you know.
I hear you,
which
man.
We saw at Charleston. Got
big
some
time.
Roll. I like that.
I love yeah. that, yeah.
Fast and firm. all right, let's end with our Canadian Open picks quickly. If anybody has any thoughts, we've got – by the way, it is the Canadian Open this week.
It is.
RBC
it is.
Canadian Open.
Always played at a different course, or it's a
it's
rotating.
It's rotating now. It's
Hamilton Golf, right?
Hamilton this time, which the players really like. I think it was there last in 2012. Scott Piercy won. So it's not, yeah, it's moved around a bit. Obviously, it used to be at
was it Glen Abbey a lot?
Glen Abbey a lot. Nicholas Design. Get Jack in the mix again. all right, Keely, what do you like?
I'm going with Henrik.
Ooh.
Henrik, I know, right? Okay. It feels like it's time. Pretty good value, 41-1. And I felt like I was starting to see some glimmers of the old Henrik Stenson out there. Like, his driving accuracy is really good. Greens and regulations really good. Putting, not great. But if he can turn that around, like, I don't see why not. He's due.
He is due.
Absolutely.
I'd be totally agree. Although I did notice, you mentioned Scott Piercy. Scott Piercy, 32-1 odds, and he's got a couple top fives.
That's not bad.
I know. So.
Scott Piercy? Yeah, well, Brooks Koepka's in there. You usually just pick the favorites. So.
I know.
Yeah.
Chuck.
Really.
DJ, Koepka, McIlroy, Thomas.
Yeah, pretty good names, actually.
But, yeah. Kuchar, 19-1.
Cool.
Might work over the Canadian rules officials. See if we can
what
get
about
it.
The Canadian exchange rate on when you're paying off caddies?
Unbelievable.
All right. I have three names just because they're all 55-1 odds. I think they all look pretty good value. Bud Colley, who we already talked about.
I was thinking about that, too. Yeah. Some all right. good vibes.
Great minds. Yeah. Jason Duffner, T7 at the Memorial, sneaky enough.
Ooh.
And then Jim Furyk. 55-1. His name's been popping up recently. I mean, if it's not one of these, if it's not 8,000-yard course, Jim Furyk still has a chance. So
he's due to shoot another 59 one of these days, right?
Yeah, there we go.
He also an RBC ambassador, which always helps.
Exactly. Ooh, sponsorship. Well, that's there are a few guys. That
well,
are
yeah,
DJ as well.
So,
yeah.
So DJ's actually
Sneds.
Win.
Sneds, right.
Yeah.
Does that ever happen where the guy wins the – I mean, it must have happened a bunch. Where it's like probably. Tiger won a bunch of Buick events when
Tiger
he was representing Buick.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay. That's the one.
Yeah. Definitely has happened. All right, guys.
Can I tell you one story real
quick?
So I tweeted this out a couple weeks ago about playing a match. Would you rather play someone – if you're playing a match – someone who you're getting strokes against,
right.
or someone that you're giving strokes to, or would you rather play someone straight up?
Right. So three options.
Right. So, and the reason I asked that question was because I played a guy who actually ended up playing straight up in a match,
mm-hmm.
and I won. I won my first round match.
Oh, did you really?
Yes.
Wait, was that Friday match that you're all stressed about?
Yes. Wow. And this is it. Keely knows the story because I long story short,
what's your handicap?
What? I'm now at 12-8. So
and you won straight up.
Straight up.
I wish everyone could see.
If James Holzhauer can lose on Jeopardy, then Sam, then you can win. So I believe it.
Let me tell the story.
Good for you.
Okay?
All right.
Let me tell the story. So I was talking to Keely because I had a lot going on Friday, and I was really stressed out, and I wanted to postpone this match. And I said So I texted the guy, and I said, "Hey, can we postpone the match?"
Oh,
what?
You can't.
No. Listen to me. Tell the story.
You rip people who do that.
Let me tell the story. All right. I texted him on Thursday night, and I said, "I got a lot going on at work. Is there any way we can postpone? If we can't, I will offer to forfeit, or maybe we can push up." And then he never got my text or never got my email. He calls me on Friday. We had our match was like 2:00. He calls me at 1:15, and he says, "Hey, I'm driving into the golf course. You know, what time are we playing?" And I said, "Did you not get my email that I'd like to postpone?" So then the guy says, "No, I never got it." So now I feel bad because the guy's counting on playing golf. I didn't want to do that team where I want to stand him up. So I was like, I better go up and play. And it worked out where like I had a window where I could go play. Mm-hmm. So no warm up. Show up to the first tee with my shoes untied, like hadn't eaten lunch or anything like that, and I rolled in my match. And my theory is the less you care, the less preparation you have for a golf match, the better off you're going
to
play.
I think there's definitely some truth to that. I need to incorporate some of that mindset into my own trip probably because I care too much. But that's interesting. But back to your question, I think personally, I would actually rather give the shots because statistically, that means you're the better player,
and you have the confidence.
And you should, yes. You more often than not will hit your number versus them. So I think statistically, it's in your favor, unless the guy's sandbagging. I'm talking if you both have true handicaps, mm-hmm. you would want to play the lesser player.
Mm-hmm. There even is a strokes. Threshold. I agree with that, but there's a threshold. Like, I'm trying to figure out the number of strokes where I start to get nervous. Like,
well, if it's half the holes, yeah, you feel like tough. You have to overachieve. On
I was gonna
every
say
hole.
It's
that's,
nine.
That's where
nine
it gets
is where I start to like yeah. think about it a little bit. Yeah. But I really like just playing straight up.
Oh yeah, no,
that's how we always played growing up.
I like playing straight up when I'm better than the person. Though. That's let's get handicapped out of the mix. All right, guys, it was fun. Thanks to Chris Powers for joining us. Thanks to Brittany Romano, our producer, as always. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already, and check back next week to see who our guest is.